Good evening, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from my house, Goffman Synagogue School of Jewish Studies. We are celebrating Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah, and we're going to continue our reading of First Maccabees right now. It's straight out of the Apocrypha. It didn't get into the Tanakh, but hey, listen, it's a good contemporaneous historical account, and it's pretty accurate. I mean, the guy who wrote it lived through this whole time period, a 40-year period. And so let's get right to it. We did chapter 1 yesterday. Let's at least do chapter 2 tonight. These chapters are relatively long, and so we'll do it the best we can within the 30 minutes. Chapter 2 of the book, First Maccabees. Now remember, we've already been introduced to wicked Antiochus. And the truth is that almost without any provocation on the part of the Jewish people, he just starts going crazy on them. He declares war on Egypt. He presumably goes through Israel in order to get to Egypt. He beats the Ptolemaic team in Egypt. So he should be very happy. He comes back, and he's just got these terrible decrees. Everybody's got to become like us Hellenistic people. A Jewish Hellenizer to join his team. And it's just absolutely horrific. He outlaws Bris Milah. He outlaws the holidays. Outlaws keeping the Torah in general. It's just really, really bad. And he kills those who do Bris Milah on their children, and he even kills the infants who had the Bris Milah done to them. It's really, it's ugly, it's brutal, it's vile, and unprovoked. It's not like, you know, the Jewish people did something to him, and this was his response. Or chapter 1 in First Maccabees lays it out. This guy was an evil guy, and he just starts in with evil things immediately. Chapter 2, verse 1. In those days arose Matthew, the son of Yochanan. Of course, in English, it's Mattathias, the son of John. And I like reading it in English because it gives you a King Jamesian or Shakespearean feel. But it does sound very funny to say Mattathias, the son of John. But I don't know. Mattathias, the son of Yochanan, the son of Shimon, a priest of the sons of Yoariv. That's how the Hebrew is pronounced. Looked it up in the, we have a, Rabbi Lavner gave me a Hebrew version of some of the books of the Apocrypha, and First Maccabees is one of them. And so Frankel, Zacharias Frankel, really the proponent of the historical critical school, and which was the forerunner of the conservative movement that we know today, he was a big scholar, and he translated into biblical Hebrew the extant Greek of First Maccabees. And so we have a Hebrew version running around that probably is not a whole lot different than the original Hebrew written 2,200 years ago. I mean, it's as good as we're going to get in a biblical Hebrew form. In those days arose Matthew, the son of Yochanan, the son of Shimon, a Kohen, a priest of the sons of Yoariv from Yerushalayim, and he dwelt in Modin. And he had five sons, and I'm going to give them the Hebrew names. Yochanan, called Kadis, maybe Kadish, who knows? Shimon called Tasi. I probably should look this up in the Hebrew. Shimon called Tasi or Tasi. Yehuda, who is called Maccabeus. Okay. Elazar called Avaran. Okay. And Yonatan, whose surname was Afus. So you know what? I'm going to give this to you in the Hebrew. It won't take long. He had five sons. Yochanan Hakachi. Okay. Shimon Hatasi, Yehuda Hamachbi, Elazar Hachorani, and Yonatan Havavsi. Okay, so you have John the Kachi, Simon the Tasi, Judah the Maccabi, right? That's how we pronounce it, Elazar the Chorani, and Yonatan the Vavsi. There, that's what we got. Verse 6. And when he, meaning Mattathias, Mattathias, when he saw the blasphemies that were committed in Judah and Jerusalem, he said, woe is me. Wherefore was I born to see this misery of my people and of the holy city, and to dwell there when it was delivered into the hand of the enemy, and the sanctuary into the hand of strangers? Her temple has become as a man without glory. Her glorious vessels are carried away into captivity. Her infants are slain in the streets. her young men with the sword of the enemy. What nation hath not had a part in her kingdom and gotten more of her spoils? In other words, what nation is out there that hasn't taken advantage of the Jewish people and stolen stuff from us? Most everybody has. What nation has not had a part in her kingdom and gotten of her spoils? What nation has not yet gotten a portion of her of the gold and silver that she once had? All her ornaments are taken away. Of a free woman, she has become a bond slave. And behold, our sanctuary, even our beauty and our glory, is laid waste, and the Gentiles have profaned it. To what end, therefore, shall we live any longer? Wow. My daughter says, that is really depressing. What is the use of life? What is life's not worth living? If we don't have our Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a place to call our own spiritually, we can't go into the temple and get recharged and do the will of God and bring a sacrifice and get and squared away with God and imbibe the spirituality of the place. Those of you who have the great, and it really was, let's face it, it was a great privilege to study with you. Chagiga. Those of you who join in, those of you who know Chagiga, you don't have to learn with me and Barry, but if you ever learned it, you know. The mitzvah there is Ria, seeing and being seen. Going up to the temple, Hashem sees you, you see the miracles, you get supercharged, you change your life, become a different person. You meet the Kohanim, you meet the Levim, you meet your fellow Yisraelim. It had to be an incredible experience. I mean, being on the Temple Mount and walking in the holy precincts and meeting the Jewish people who are doing the service, the Avoda, and hearing the songs from the Levim and talking to the Kohen as he processes you and your fellow Israelites all around you, and you're just mixing it up and meeting people, Jews from all over the world, or at least all over Israel, way back in the day, all over Israel. Later on, Second Temple, all over the world. An incredible thing. And now it's not here. Now it's a pagan sanctuary. Matthew says, "What life's just not worth living anymore. What am I doing here?" Verse 14. Then Matthew and his sons rent their clothes and put on sackcloth and mourned very sore. In the meantime, while the king's officers, in the meantime, the king's officers, such as compelled the people to revolt, came into the city Modin to make them sacrifice. What does it mean? It means here come the king's bad men. They were the ones who instigated, obviously the ones who are promulgating the evil decrees, and they are enforcing the evil decrees. They're the law enforcement. And so they're the ones who prompted the Jewish people to revolt. I mean, this is, of course, we haven't yet seen the revolt happen just yet, but it's going to happen any verse now, literally any second. Tonight, we're going to be reading about the beginning of the successful revolution against the Syrian Greeks. So again, verse 15. In the meantime, the king's officers, the ones who compelled the people to revolt, those officers of Antiochus came into the city of Modin to make them sacrifice, to make them offer up unkosher animals of sacrifice. And when many of Israel came unto them, Matthew also and his sons came together. So you have a big crowd. Imagine this. Here come the Antiochus' officers, and I'm sure they had guards with them, with arms, and they make a proclamation. We're going to hear it in a second. So all the Jews want to gather around and hear what's the news now. And now what are they going to do to us? What's the plan now? How are they going to hurt us? How are they going to kill us? So Matthew and his sons gathered along with the big group of Klal Yisrael that was gathering in Modin. Verse 17. Then answered the king's officers and said to Matthew, on this wise, meaning to this effect, thou art a ruler and an honorable and great man in the city, and strengthened with sons and brethren. Now therefore come thou first, you come first, and fulfill the king's commandment, like as all the heathen have done, yea, and the men of Judah also, and such as remain at Jerusalem. So shalt thou and thy house be in the number of the king's friends. If you listen to the king and do what he wants and fulfill the king's command, like the heathens have done, like the men of Judah have done, and like the ones who are still sticking around in Jerusalem have done, then you and your house will be in the number of the king's friends, and thou and thy children shall be honored with silver and gold and many rewards. Verse 19, then Matthew answered and spake with a loud voice, though all the nations that are under the king's dominion obey him, and fall away every one from the religion of their fathers, and give consent to his commandments, yet will I and my sons and my brethren walk in the covenant of our fathers. God forbid that we should forsake the law and the ordinances. Wow. We will not hearken to the king's words to go from our religion either on the right hand or the left. Now when he had left speaking these words, there came one of the Jews in the sight of all to sacrifice on the altar which was at Modin, according to the king's commandment. Which thing, when Matthew saw, he was inflamed with zeal, and his reins trembled. Neither could he forbear to show his anger according to judgment. Wherefore he ran and slew him upon the altar. Matthew killed that Jew who was going to serve Antiochus and offer up an animal on the bad altar of the Greeks. Also, the king's commissioner who compelled men to sacrifice, he, Matthew, killed at that time, and the altar he pulled down. Thus dealt he zealously for the law of God, like as Pinchas did unto Zimri, the son of Salom. Yep, Pinchas did unto Zimri, the son of Salom, it says here. And Matthew cried throughout the city with a loud voice, saying, whosoever is zealous of the law and maintaineth the covenant, let him follow me. So he and his sons fled into the mountains and left all that ever they had in the city. Then many that sought after justice and judgment went down into the wilderness to dwell there, both they and their children and their wives and their cattle, because afflictions increased sore upon them. Now, when it was told the king's servants and the host that was at Jerusalem in the city of David that certain men who had broken the king's commandment were gone down into the secret places in the wilderness, they pursued after them a great number. The Greeks pursued the Jews into the wilderness, and having overtaken them, they camped against them and made war against them on the Sabbath day. And they said unto them, let that which ye have done hitherto suffice. Come forth and do according to the commandment of the king, and you shall live. What are they saying? The Greeks are saying to the Jews, come on out. We'll let bygones be bygones. Whatever you did, you did. Why don't you just come on out now and just listen to the king, Antiochus, do what he says, and you will live. That's the offer. But they said, we will not come forth, neither will we do the king's commandment to profane the Sabbath day. That was the Jewish response. What's the Greek response to that denial of an offer? It's like a modern-day contract talk. So then they gave them the battle with all speed. King Jamesian talk for, the Greeks then engaged the Jews in battle quickly. 36, howbeit, they answered them not, neither cast they a stone at them, nor stopped the places where they lay hid. The Jewish response was not to engage in battle.
That was the initial Jewish response. They did not fight back. They answered them not, neither cast they a stone at them, nor did they stop the places where they lay hid. They didn't stop up the places. They didn't put up stones or whatever. They just kind of just lay down. Verse 37, but said, they, the Jewish people, said, let us die all in our innocency. Let us just die innocently as Jews. Heaven and earth shall testify for us that you put us to death wrongfully. So they rose up against them. There's a lot of pronouns. And Chappelle's, they would never let me read that verse like that. So they, meaning the Syrian Greeks, rose up against them, meaning the Jews, in battle on the Sabbath, and they slew them. The Syrian Greeks slew the Jews with their wives and children and their cattle to the number of 1,000 people. Now when Matisyahu and his friends understood hereof, when he heard what had happened, they mourned for them right sore, very, very much. And one of them said to another, if we all do as our brethren have done, and fight not for our lives and laws against the heathen, they will now quickly root us out of the earth. We'll all be dead in a matter of days or weeks. The whole Jewish nation will be just wiped out and gone if this keeps up like this. They'll just keep on attacking us on Shabbos. And if we're not going to fight back on Shabbos, we shall all be dead. My father taught me this cute little Britishism that a king, a prime minister says to his assistant, did you take care of this? He says, eventually, my lord, I shall. And the prime minister then says about something else, have you taken care of that? He says, eventually, my lord, eventually. The prime minister says, eventually? He says, eventually? Eventually, we'll all be dead, my lord. You know, so, I mean, we're all going to, you have to eventually get over the eventual, and you got to get things done. You got to get it done. Eventually, we shall all be dead. So over here, that's what Matthew was saying. Eventually, we shall all be dead. If we all do as our brethren have done, and fight not for our lives and laws against the heathen, they will now quickly root us out of the earth. At that time, therefore, they decreed, saying, whosoever shall come to make battle with us on the Sabbath day, we will fight against him. Neither will we die all as our brethren that were murdered in the secret places. I want to stop for just a second and make note of the fact that Yeshivat Ner Yisrael has just recently come out this Hanukkah with a little booklet dedicated to Torah thoughts relating to Hanukkah. And one of them is a piece by the late and great Rosh Hashiva Rabbi Shmuel Yankel Weinberg, Shmuel Yankel Weinberg Zatzal, who was a celebrated Rosh Hashiva, and he was, of course, the rabbi of many of our own Rosh Hakol here, and he was Rabbi Bechhofer's Rosh Hashiva in Ner Yisrael back in the day. And so when we had Rabbi Bechhofer as a scholar in residence, he spent the whole Lel Shabbos talking about Rabbi Weinberg. So Weinberg has a whole piece about this very idea, about not fighting on Shabbos. And he says that there are midrashim that describe how they did not fight. And of course he raises a very, very good question. Didn't they know the famous drush? Wasn't it already circulating ever since God told it to Moses that v'chai b'hem, you have to live with these laws, v'lo she'amut b'hem, and not to die with these laws. I mean, you're expected to live. The Torah is a prescription for life, not for suicide. And if you're going to just keep on getting attacked, specifically on Shabbos, well, then you're going to just all get killed. That's not the way things ought to go. Didn't they know this teaching? Well, he assumes that they did. And therefore, since they knew the law of v'chai b'hem, you should live with these laws. So then what were they thinking when they initially, you know, put down their lives and didn't fight back on Shabbos? Now, I don't have it in front of me at the moment. I'm thinking of translating it that can read it to you before the holiday of Hanukkah is over, so we can have some sort of insight into this very little chapter, which records, undeniably it records, how initially the Jewish people just laid down their lives on Shabbos and didn't fight back. And the Midrashim, which were recorded later, and the Midrashim get recorded later than this. This is written, the scholars feel, between the year 175 before the Common Era and 135 before the Common Era. The Midrashim at earliest were written in the first century, in the second century. They were put to ink on paper. So they were written a little bit later, but the story was circulating around. Everybody knew this. And of course, First Maccabees was written, so people were presumably reading it. And so this was well known. And so I owe you a rather good translation of Herbert Weinberg's piece. And Belina, I'm going to try to make every effort to work on that so we can have that read to you before Hanukkah is over. We'll revisit this idea. Okay? Verse 42. Then came unto Matasyo a company of Assyrians. That's how it comes down in this English word, Assyrians. But if you look at Frankl's translation from the Greek into the Hebrew, he writes Hasidim. And that word works perfectly. They were Hasidim, not like the Hasidim of today. I'm sure they weren't coming in with, well, who knows what they look like, you know, with long black coats and big, Shreimloch and long beards. And so they all had beards. And Langepais and Weissezak in white socks with the shoes with no laces. There came a company of Hasidim who were mighty men of Israel, even all such as were voluntarily devoted unto the law. I love that. It's so King James. I'm reading, right. They were devoted to the Torah. Even all such as were voluntarily devoted unto the law. Wow. I love that. That Shakespearean King Jamesian lawyer. This is so great. 43. Also, all they that fled for persecution joined themselves unto them and were a stay unto them. So you had even more Jews jumping on the bandwagon, on the Matasyahu bandwagon, and they were a stay unto them. They were a help unto them. They were a support. They were offering aid, assistance, and support, and morale boosting unto the Jewish people who were in the forest. So they joined their forces, and they smote sinful men in their anger and wicked men in their wrath. But the rest fled to the heathen for succor. So the Matasyahu people were killing down the evil guys, beating down and killing the heathens among them, who were attacking. And the rest, they fled for their lives in fear, and they went to their fellow heathens for support. Then Matasyahu and his friends went round about and pulled down the altars and what children soever they found within the coast of Israel uncircumcised, those they circumcised valiantly. So you have to remember, that was a capital crime. In that time period, Antiochus had made Bris Milah a capital crime, and the men who had been gemalt put weights on themselves in a certain part of their body in order to cover up the fact that they had once been gemalt, and they wanted to look like Greek heathen, pagans, who were uncut, if you will. Hate to be so blunt. What can I say? It's the material, and we got to get clarify it. So here comes Matasyahu, and he's running around Israel to every newborn, infant, baby, male baby, saying, I gotta give you Bris Milah. We got to fight Antiochus. They pursued also after the proud men, and the work prospered in their hands. They were doing good. God was blessing them. So they recovered the law out of the hand of the Gentiles and out of the hand of kings. Neither suffered they the sinner to triumph. They did not allow the sinner to win. They were winning. Now when the time drew near that Matasyahu should die, he said unto his sons, now hath pride and rebuke gotten strength, and the time of destruction and the wrath of indignation. Again, now hath pride and rebuke gotten strength, and the time of destruction and the wrath of indignation. We are on the ascendancy, he says. We are the ones with the pride. We're the ones rebuking the evil ones. We're the ones who are giving them destruction. We are the ones who've got the wrath of indignation. It's all on our side. We're winning. Now, therefore, my sons, be ye zealous for the law and give your lives for the covenant of your fathers. Call to remembrance what acts our fathers did in their time. So shall ye receive great honor and an everlasting name. Was not Abraham found faithful in temptation, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness? Joseph, in the time of his distress, kept the commandment and was made lord of Egypt. Pinchas, our father, in being zealous and fervent, obtained the covenant of an everlasting priesthood. Joshua, for fulfilling the word, was made a judge in Israel. Caleb, for bearing witness before the congregation, received the heritage of the land. David, for being merciful, possessed the throne of an everlasting kingdom. Elias, meaning, of course, Elijah the prophet. Elias, for being zealous and fervent for the law, was taken up into heaven. Ananias, Azarias, and Misael, man, I love saying those names, Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, by believing, were saved out of the flame. Daniel, for his innocency, was delivered from the mouth of lions. And thus consider ye throughout all ages, that none that put their trust in him shall be overcome. Fear not, then, the words of a sinful man, for his glory shall be dung and worms. Today he shall be lifted up, and tomorrow he shall not be found, because he is returned into his dust, and his thought is come to nothing. Wherefore, ye, my sons, be valiant, and show yourselves men in the behalf of the law, for by it shall ye obtain glory. And behold, I know that your brother Simon is a man of counsel. Give ear unto him always. He shall be a father unto you. As for Judas Maccabeus, he hath been mighty and strong, even from his youth up. Let him be your captain and fight the battle of the people. Take also unto you all those that observe the law, and avenge ye the wrong of your people. Recompense fully the heathen, and take heed to the commandments of the law. So he blessed them, and was gathered to his fathers. And he died in the 146th year, and his sons buried him in the sepulchres of his fathers at Modin, and all Israel made great lamentation for him. But dear friends, that's tonight's class. We basically said it was going to be 6:30 to 7. So I know that we're a little bit behind in our schedule, but we got a major chapter in over there. We've done two chapters, and with God's help, we'll continue to read them every night. You can let me know if you have more time in your schedule to go an extra 15 minutes. Maybe we can do an extra chapter or so. Let me know. You can email me at paulplotsker@gmail.com. PaulPlotsker, all one word. paulplotsker@gmail.com. Let me know if you're enjoying it. Let me know if you want to have a little bit more time in just 30 minutes. Wishing everybody a very happy, healthy, safe, and productive Hanukkah. Shaul Plotsker signing off for Gulf Manor Synagogue at our School of Jewish Studies, with deepest thanks to Jake and Mitch of SheerEnjoyment.com for making this possible. Thank you so much up in Chicagoland. A big Yishkaref to you. Thank you all very much for calling in. Wishing everybody a great holiday of Hanukkah, and God willing, tomorrow night, 6:30, we'll gather around the fireplace and read chapter 3. Take care and be well. Have a great Hanukkah. All the best. Oh, don't forget, we have a 7:30 class tomorrow as usual. Our Tanakh Tuesday class continues apace. No reason not to learn Torah on Hanukkah. Have a great Hanukkah. See you tomorrow, 6:30 sharp, for chapter 3 of First Maccabees. All the best. Bye-bye.